Welcome to Insights as a Service. I am joined by Nick Phillips. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Brendan.
Nice. Good to see you. We are very much, one of us should probably go and change. Same shirts. We should talk more
about
these.
This morning. Sorry.
Oh, well, we're both here. Of course, Insights as a Service, this is the podcast that aims to help MSPs get ahead. And today we're going to do that through a couple of things. One, we're going to talk about the Australian experience with Omicron in light of the fact that eventually it's going to happen in New Zealand. We're going to have a look at what we've learned over here and maybe what we can help our MSP partners in New Zealand learn from that experience. And then we'll get into some news. But probably a good idea to timestamp this, to date stamp it. It's the 19th of January. Nick, what's the current status over there in terms of Omicron? Have you guys actually got any of that yet?
It's knocking on the door. I think we've got two cases in the current country currently at the moment, one being an MIQ worker and one being a close contact of that worker from memory. But no more Omicron cases today. Omicron cases.
Omicron. Yeah, there's a real issue over there. A lot of people keep saying Omicron, and I'm like almost certain that it's not. It's definitely Omicron. But yeah.
It's definitely Omi. Yeah.
Okay. So, over here we kind of had a situation before Christmas where it kind of went from 0 to 100 very, very quickly. And there's probably been a bit of a shock for most businesses operating over here, exactly how it's all played out. I guess another question for you actually to start off with. Over there at the moment, if you think you have COVID, do you have to get the PCR test or the RAT, the rapid antigen test? Is that an option?
It's the big up the nose one. As someone who recently experienced that for the first time, it is horrible, and I don't envy anyone who has to do that on a weekly basis. It is painful.
Yeah. And that was one of the first things to change over here. So within about a week of Omicron first appearing, and this is the Southeast Queensland experience, right? Like I haven't been down to Sydney or Melbourne in years because of this whole thing, but there were queues. I'm not exaggerating to say sort of 8-hour queues for PCR tests within a week or so. And the time to get results back from those tests went from about 2 days to 7 days. Some people just weren't getting the results. They're getting lost in the system. And of course, during that period, those people were looking to get those tests because it was the only way to get out of isolation, to get back to work. But those experiences very quickly led to a change in rules that said, okay, if you get a rapid antigen test, the RAT, then that will suffice as long as you report the results and isolate effectively. Accordingly. And that led to an absolute rush on the RATs. And immediately there were no more of those. So as the rules changed, it just felt like more and more problems arose as a result.
Mm. I actually saw a little sidebar here. Customs had blocked, it may have been like DHL or another kind of courier company had ordered a bunch of RAT tests themselves. And one of the customs, I just think in Australia, it held up the order because they were worried they were going to on-sell them for a profit. Even trying to get them through your company seems to be pretty challenging these days.
Yeah, so I guess that's my first bit of advice for MSPs in NZ is fairly quickly, when it does get loose in NZ, there's going to be a move away from PCR, if our experience is anything to go by, to rapid antigen tests. So if you can stock up now, are they widely available over there? Have you guys got any current shortfall in rapid antigen test availability?
It's pretty closely guarded. Like you mostly have to go to the pharmacy to get one. They're like watched tests. There's not so many take home, do it yourself.
Okay.
Buy, put them in your doomsday bunker, set up.
Okay. Well, look, I can't claim to understand the purchasing model over there for the old RATs at the moment, but certainly if you're able to stock up on tests for your staff, the family members that your team members live with, that's going to get you a long way ahead. We found that over here in Queensland, when two of our team tested positive, and actually I was with the crew, it was Romaine and Jack, when those guys got struck down, I wasn't sure whether I had it or not. You started imaging some symptoms, you're not quite sure what's what. I couldn't get a hold of a test. and work ended up sending over a whole bunch from New Zealand. In New Zealand, we managed to get a bunch of tests set aside. So, I mean, that in itself tells me that it's possible, it's doable. And it was some good foresight by Danielle and our PNC team. But, you know, they're as rare as hen's teeth. There's a site over here called Find a Rat, I think it's called. And it's basically, you know, crowdsourced info where people will report when they're actually able to find a rapid antigen test. The pharmacy across the road from me was reported to have some, although in low stock. I went over the road and I heard some people next to me say, oh, words obviously got out then, but the staff were already putting out more signs saying, we have none of these in stock, so don't bother asking. So it was just mad. I mean, it still is madness. They're still not available in any meaningful number. So I guess, yeah, as I say, my first advice is make sure that you've got a bunch of tests ready to go because you're going to need them. The other thing that changed pretty rapidly here was, you know, home isolation for 10 to 14 days. I can't remember exactly what the rule was when it kicked off. Pretty quickly went down to 7. Then the definition of a close contact changed from being someone you were with for more than a few hours to someone who you had to live with and have been around for a sort of a 4-hour period at any point in time during their illness. So yeah, everything changed very rapidly. So there was confusion around the rules, but ultimately, whatever the rule ended up being, it still revolved around a negative rapid antigen test, giving you freedom to go back to work, giving you freedom to exit isolation, and just giving you a sense of understanding of your own status, really. So yeah, stock up and prepare for confusion because the rules will change as the, I guess, the rules, the regulations are no longer fit for purpose.
I think people are still trying to get used to the color coding system here of green, orange, and red, let alone rapid changing on the go. So we'll have to see what that looks like in New Zealand, but I think that's going to be bloody chaotic and it'll just cause mass confusion.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of get our head around that it's only been about a month here. I think that's right, Romain, right? It's been like a month. Yeah, it's only been a month and it's just been chaos. The craziest thing is, and this is where I think it's so important to think about it as a business owner, if you're an MSP operating out there with, you know, a team in various places, our experience here has shown that a lot of businesses have had to shut down, reduce hours, decline work because they just don't have the staff. The staff are either in isolation or they're sick. And if they're in an environment where they're not able to work remotely, then they're in the office together. When one gets sick, they all get sick. It's having a real impact on business continuity. So I know I'm a broken record here, but in terms of business continuity planning, it's all about those tests. And it's secondly, all about enabling your team to work from anywhere so that if you can, as you know, the wave is really hitting its stride, which will happen within a few weeks when it really gets going, enabling people to say, yep, don't come into the office unless you absolutely have to. And if you do have to, you know, coordinate with other team members to make sure that you're staging it. And I guess the next part of the puzzle is PPE. If you absolutely have to go to a client's location because you're an essential worker, if you have to go to a data center to make changes and those things can't be delayed, making sure you've got a really good stockpile of masks at a minimum. And again, those rapid antigen tests is pretty key.
And not just, you know, those cloth masks, like proper protective equipment, the good ones, ones.
Yeah, ideally.
N95s.
Have you seen, the M95s, that's interesting. I saw some article, I don't know if it was in Bloomberg or something, but it was saying that essentially a lot of jurisdictions, I think in the US now, are saying the cloth masks just aren't okay. You've basically got to have the M95 or the medical grade version.
Yeah, I think I saw something similar. And it was there's another one. It was like time to get infected if you were wearing, you know, the N95 as cloth mask or cloth mask was filter cloth masks. Silk masks, you know, kind of compared them all. So they're kind of, you know, almost just a fashion accessory or, you know, branded merchandise at this point.
Yeah. I think the last thing I'll say before we close off on this is that the change in rules is often, I'll reframe. Basically, businesses needed to be hurting quite a lot here before the rules caught up with reality. So businesses were already having to shut down, people already in isolation far longer than the economy could really tolerate. when you think of all the key roles there are in transport, logistics, distribution centers, the hospitals themselves. So the rule around only 7 days isolation came after a lot of shutdowns, and the definition change of what was or was not a close contact changed when they realized they were still very short. You know, there were supermarket chains reporting 40% reduction in distribution center staff. The shelves here are very, very sparse still in most supermarkets. So I suppose the point to this is don't expect the government or the health officials to necessarily understand the pain you're in real time. It's going to be that you hurt and then the rules change. So if you can get ahead of that in any way possible with the measures we've already discussed today, it's definitely in your interest to think well ahead.
I'll just add one other really good point is, with the
Omicron. Up yourself. I'm just going to add a really good point that I came up with.
It is. It's a really good point. But, we were fortunate that our staff member kind of caught it over the Christmas period where it's nice and quiet in the telco industry due to brownouts and clients taking leave and stuff like that. But, the ongoing effects of that weigh heavily on their performance and ability to, produce work and work at, high sustained levels. So, if you have a large number of your staff infected with this, the tail end of your company's output and ability to deliver and perform contractual obligations can be at risk. So, that's again another thing that just needs to be factored into your strategy around managing the outbreak.
Yeah, I'll give you that. It's not a bad point. I think if this had happened in a period. Well, it's been really difficult for other sectors, right? Tourism has really hurt over the Christmas period. It would have been huge for them, but it's been much quieter than it would have otherwise been as people have been on leave. But you're right, for a professional services sector, for managed service providers here, it was going to be a quieter period anyway. And it's probably got, according to projections, about another month to run before we hit peak and then start sort of leveling off. So you're dead right. It's probably not going to hit New Zealand in such an advantageous time for the MSPs out there. All right. Let's kick on to some news, and in no particular order, given you are our space correspondent, all things space, do you want to touch on the bit of news you were talking to me about the other day around Vocus and their satellite plans?
Yeah, well, Vocus are continuing their trajectory into the space race. This time they have partnered up with they are called OneWeb, being a wholesaler of that satellite service, looking to compete against the likes of Starlink in the Australian market space.
Are they competing with them directly? Well, this is a very business-focused play, right?
It is. It's a business-focused play, and these other Starlink, other space and satellite providers are generally targeting the industrial sectors, whereas Amazon, Elon Musk, Starlink, they're focused on that consumer mass market approach.
Yeah, this looks very, very, very business focused. It's an interesting space, though, isn't it? Because what were they called? Sorry, OneWeb.
OneWeb.
Yeah. So the news link you sent me earlier in the week said that they'd been bailed out. Essentially, it's not a game you want to go into without deep pockets.
Oh, we're talking huge numbers here. Where is it here? Musk is up for, $30 billion in his satellite race. Amazon has dedicated $10 billion to their project. And OneWeb has $2.4 billion in the game and have, less than a third of the amount of satellites that Starlink have. So, we're talking some serious numbers. And when it all goes wrong, we're talking big bailouts to the tune that the government actually bailed out, the British government, UK government bailed out. OneWeb late last year, I think, and spent something like $50 million in legal fees and finance.
So not easy to digest in a time when there's austerity all over the place and confinements and stuff. But it's interesting. You're right. The comparative spend difference, $2.4 versus $30 billion, 800 satellites compared to 2,000 and growing for Starlink. It kind of is pretty representative of that difference in spend, but the technology sounds sound. They've got the low Earth orbit approach, very similar, seems to be the thing now, the only thing for the low latency speeds. came in
50 to 100, I think, for the OneWeb one, milliseconds.
For latency? Okay, 50 to 100. Mm. Yeah, okay, very similar to Starlink. And you'd have to assume then speed would be similar. And Starlink about seeing 190 speed.
190 by 30 or something.
Yeah, so very similar. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Same, same.
It was interesting, actually, just a quick aside with the eruption in Tonga in the last couple of days, how a lot of connectivity was completely lost in that scenario. And there were flyovers just to see exactly what was going on by Australia and New Zealand governments. Feels like that should be a thing of the past. I mean, these things still need power, but other than that, they're kind of good to go even in that scenario.
Everything needs power. Everything goes to a base station somewhere. You know, I don't think we can totally rule out the true force of Mother Earth. You know, a satellite dish covered by ash is probably no line of sight. So
no, I'm ruling it out. Should have worked. All right.
Technology should have done better and not failed us.
Oh, well, next time. Orcon, 2 degrees, just clarifying that that is a go in that Orcon, also known as Vocus, is buying 2 degrees, 1.6 billion. I think that's in AU dollars, so a little bit more in New Zealand dollars. Our friend of the show, Mark Callender, didn't respond when I hit him up on LinkedIn saying, hey, given you guys have had to deal with an MVNO scenario for the last couple of years, are you going to make sure that people like Lightwire and maybe other MSPs out there have access to really sound wholesale mobile voice and data offers? He didn't reply, but Charlie Boyd, the general sales manager wholesale at Vocus New Zealand, gave me a thumbs up. So I'm taking that as an explicit yes. Yes, we will. For anyone who doesn't know, the wholesale market in New Zealand for voice, mobile voice and data has been really horrible for a long time. There's only three carriers in New Zealand, Spark, Vodafone, and 2degrees. Now that Vocus owns 2degrees, they have an opportunity to really differentiate themselves in the wholesale market. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they do.
Please do.
Yes, absolutely. Please. All right. What do you want to talk about next?
Australia, director's liability for cybersecurity.
Mm, I'm a director. I want to not be fined, ideally.
Mm. Or the company to be fined as well.
That's also important.
So that that comes background to reporting on security incidents, you know, critical infrastructure asset reporting, breaches of those and attacks against those assets. Responsible entities must also go under, also report under various rules. So within particular timeframes, if an incident occurs, you know, I think that's going to probably be something that will filter down to New Zealand at some point as well. But it's going to also create a lot more work in the market for MSPs. What do you have to say about that, Brendan?
Well, Nick, I have probably one key thing to say. That would be that we actually saw with the Instillery in New Zealand, they brought a company called Two Black Labs, which makes me think of your Two Black Labs, Nick, because they are also Black Labs. But Black no, Labs. They bought Two Black Labs, which as I understand it is a privacy consultancy firm. It's a pretty tricky space to navigate and increasingly so cybersecurity compliance obligations. And there's definitely an opportunity, a growing consultancy opportunity here off the back of laws like these. And as you indicated there, it won't be the last change. It's a very fluid space. The laws are always a bit behind, I think, reality on the ground. So yeah, there's definitely a value add opportunity there for the types of people who listen to this podcast.
Yeah, it's some of those reporting requirements where, you know, within 12 hours of the incident occurring, to have your business processes built around that, it could be quite tough for some of those smaller firms, and particularly those that just are not geared up well from a technology perspective to even know that they've got incidents occurring. So
yeah, as I understand,
a lot of money in that sector to be made.
Oh, heaps. And I guess there's always a bit of ambiguity around what is a critical infrastructure asset, you know? So just from sort of covering your own ass, really, it's important to understand that definition, maybe get some third-party advice on whether or not your interpretation of that definition is correct. And that's, again, where those MSPs can add some value. All right, let's talk about NBN weighing in on what TPG should and shouldn't be allowed to do when it comes to structural separation. So a little bit of a timeline for you all. In 2017, the Australian government made it unviable through taxes and restrictions, I should say, for TPG to run with a planned rollout of fiber to the basement services, where they were going to connect something like 500,000 apartments through a huge number of apartment buildings in metro areas. And the government basically stonewalled that approach to protect the investment already made in the NBN network, which had actually started in the regions and then was going to do the metro areas last, whereas TPG was going direct to the metro areas. The rules put in place, or the restrictions put in place by the government, meant that TPG just backed out of that, didn't pursue it. Now they're looking at breaking out a wholesale entity in order to offer those same services that won't be subject to the same penalties. And surprisingly, NBN is broadly supportive of this. They've just come back to the ACCC saying, if you're going to allow TPG to break out a structurally separated wholesale entity, you need to be looking really closely to make sure there is genuine structural division creation, that people working in the wholesale entity or the retail entity aren't working off the same systems. They're not talking to each other about, you know, how to get the best deal for an end user. It's a fair playing ground for everybody working with that wholesale entity. And I got to say, that seems like a reasonable thing to say, because in my experience, TPG's wholesale arm has never offered a particularly compelling offer against that it enabled its retail arm to put forward, albeit they haven't been forced to structurally separate to date. So they're within their rights to do that. It's just never been a particularly easy thing to be a wholesale customer of TPG.
Good insights.
Thank you.
And I think the last one that we have coming up is New Zealand, land of the data center.
Yeah, it's a big year for data center announcements.
Yeah, another one going in, this time in the South Island, the very bottom of Middle Earth, Invercargill.
Yes, it's driven by cold weather, making it 15% more cost effective to cool, or cost efficient, or energy efficient, one of those words, one of those phrases. Certainly cheaper to cool, and that means less power. I think the TY aluminium smelter is closing down in 2024, which is going to free up a huge amount of electricity off the grid. But apparently, even without that happening, if that was to be pushed out, that closure date, it would still be fine to power. But it's also
100 megawatts, I think it's going to get hooked up with.
Okay. It's a lot of megawatts.
It's a lot of power.
Yeah. But the interesting thing there is the Huaki Nui cable, which we talked about a couple of episodes back, is going to connect the bottom of the South Island, or the South Island in its entirety for the first time, to an undersea cable network that connects with the rest of the world rather than just the North Island. So from a latency perspective to international markets, that probably solves a lot of the problems that would have previously existed. And it looks like
I was going to say, you know, I saw an article the other day that, you know, Invercargill is kind of the last bastion of cheap housing in New Zealand. And you know, we might suddenly find a pop-up tech sector really booming down there. There is already one in Dunedin with the gaming sector.
True.
That's kind of a little hub for them down there in Otago Uni and things. So, you know, I think it could be the localized cloud storage or low latency that people kind of need to truly develop.
I saw Huaki's also been selected to run a cable from Chile. I don't know how to pronounce that country properly, but it is going to Sydney, and there's an option there for it to have a little offshoot into Invercargill to be a second connection into the South Island. So if that's the case, it's only going to be better for that connectivity piece, maybe redundant paths out. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see which anchor tenants sign up. I'm sure we'll start hearing some announcements in the next month or two, because they look to be planning to start building that out in the second half of this year. All right. Stuff. Anything else you want to talk about, Nick, before we wrap it up for this episode?
No, I think we should wrap it up, race to the supermarket, do the mad bulk buy of toilet paper and some essential supplies, reading into what you've been saying. So
yeah,
it's my afternoon.
I really don't want to be
a joke.
Yeah, I know, but it's worth saying, I guess, at least to a little disclaimer here, is that I don't want to be alarmist, But I just think it's reality. If New Zealand somehow managed to escape Omicron, it would be an absolute miracle. And I think you're best to err on the side of caution. And yeah, so obviously I hope everyone stays safe. I hope that in the event that it gets out, you know, the system holds up, the health system holds up, and everyone's in really good health. But our experience here shows it's kind of crazy. It got out of hand real quick. So yeah, whatever you can do to protect your business, protect your people, protect your family, now is probably a really good time to start getting on top of that. Cool. All right. Thanks, Nick. Let's leave it there. We, of course, will be back in a week's time. I've got an interview with Tim Phillips, who is an agile specialist, an expert, a man I've... He's not related. One L, you're two L's. Very important distinction. But yeah, super smart guy. Had a really interesting chat around what agile is, what it means in practice, the methodology, the methodologies can be built off the back of it. So hopefully, again, that'll appeal to MSPs out there who are looking to scale cost effectively and really get their teams firing. So we'll see you again next episode. If you're looking for Nick on LinkedIn, Nick Phillips, two L's. If you're looking for me, Brendan Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-I-E. Any suggestions, tips, or if you want to come on and have a chat with us, just let us know. Otherwise, we'll see you next time around.